Okay, thank you everyone for joining and welcome to our last webinar of the year. And I've got to say, we've saved the best until last. A lot has happened over the course of 2025, which I think has definitely shaped the cybersecurity outlook for 2026. And each year we put together our trends and predictions guide, an amalgamation of the views of our army of experts at Integrity 360, focusing on what to look out for in 2026, what developments we expect to see, and what we believe organizations should be focusing on over the course of next year. And all of this is underpinned by stats and trends that we've observed in the wild. We'll be launching the guide today, so we will include it on a follow-up email so that you can get it yourself. It is not possible to cover all of the elements in just one webinar, so well worth downloading to get a handle on all of those. So let me introduce the team for today. We will be doing a round table or a Q&A session today to walk through some of those elements. And each of the people that we've got on the webinar today have all provided key inputs for our guide. So I'm Rich Ford, Integrity's CTO, and I've got the pleasure of hosting the team today. So starting from left to right, if I just move our slides on, we have Brian Martin. So Brian is our Director of Product Management at Integrity 360, and is responsible for managing and developing the group's portfolio of cybersecurity services and solutions. Brian has extensive experience across IT, software development, telecoms, and over the last 10 years has focused on cybersecurity in all aspects, technology services, processes, and best practice. We're also joined by Ahmed. Ahmed is a technical product manager working alongside Brian, who specializes in cloud, network security, and data, and identity. He's 13 years in the IT and cybersecurity field, with multiple roles across network and security training, engineer, architect, consultant. He's done it all. And the main focus for himself at the moment is threat detection response, CNAPP, so cloud native application protection platforms, SASE, and zero trust. And last but definitely not least, we've got Martin. Martin, having grown up in San Antonio, Texas, he's got a passion for cybersecurity that dates back as far as 1999, so the 20th century. His focus is on preventing cyber attacks from happening, and this has made him an excellent tracker of potential risks and weaknesses within systems, and given him in-depth knowledge of how to mitigate them. He co-founded Enclose in 2006, that was acquired by Integrity 360, and managed as the technical director for 18 years. And he now serves as our regional chief technology officer for South Africa and the African region. Martin is the brainchild behind CyberFire MDR, which is now the organization's flagship turnkey MDR platform, which is implemented across various regions in the world. So thank you guys, and very much welcome to the webinar. I'll just give a call out to Rebecca, who's in the background operating things on Zoom from our marketing team, unsung hero for us. So I just wanted to flag that the webinar is being recorded for anybody who may be interested to watch it back or to share that with colleagues. And also that we'll be running a Q&A function at the very end of the session. So please, if you have any questions, pop them into the Q&A and we can put ourselves, or you can put us, to the test on our knowledge and views for 2026. We're also going to run some polls, maybe one or two polls potentially. And I think that's a great place to start. So Rebecca, if we could launch the first poll, please. So, what trends are you most concerned about in 2026? So, if you want to call out which trends, and we can see what you guys are looking at, and potentially what we need to focus on. So, we'll just give that 20 seconds or so, and then we can look at the results and then kick off. So if you want to call it there, Rebecca, let's have a look at the results of that poll. Lovely, thank you very much. Well, unsurprisingly, as AI is the topic on the tip of everyone's tongue, is overwhelmingly over 50%, which is creeping over 50%, had to see that as the main concern or challenge. I suppose we could also challenge about whether it's the a great opportunity. And then second on the list, geopolitics. Well, do you know what? We have got that on the agenda, so we'll be getting political in a little bit. And obviously, no one is concerned about identity, which we will touch upon. And we can put Ahmed to the test around identity. So I'm going to stop sharing the screen and we can get into some of these topics and look at some of the views from our panelists. So we're going to start with moving from cybersecurity to cyber resilience, because I think it's very important. It's a key trend that that we're looking at, that we see in the industry over and over again. And it's something that we'll be focusing on at Security First this year, along a load of other topics. For anybody that's not aware of what Security First is, that is our annual conference that we run around the EMEA region. So no doubt there will be a Security First conference in your region. And I encourage you to sign up and join for a full day of expert insights, and it is purely insights. So Brian, I'm going to start with you on this topic, and really, let's get into the meat of it. What is cyber resilience, and why are people starting to think about it? Why are we talking about cyber resilience and not just cyber security?
Yes, Rich, thanks. And that certainly is a trend we're seeing, and a lot of thinking shifting in that direction. I guess I'd start by defining it. So, and there are many different definitions that people use. I particularly like the NIST definition, which I think captures it very well: the ability to anticipate, withstand, recover from, and adapt to adverse conditions, stresses, attacks, or compromises on systems. So effectively, I like that it's not just about protection, it's not just about prevention or detection. All of that is noble, but unrealistic and insufficient. Like, we need to anticipate identifying weak links before they're exploited. We need to be able to withstand attacks, ensuring defenses are hardened and we can identify and repel those that want to do you harm. And then crucially, we want to be able to recover. So people are focusing on resilience instead of just cybersecurity, because I guess they're realizing that, cybersecurity measures alone aren't enough to prevent all attacks. Cyber resilience acknowledges, like, there's an inevitability, if you like, about breaches happening, and is more, emphasizing the ability to be able to recover and continue operating after an attack. Minimizing the downtime, minimizing the damage. So by shifting your thinking in this direction, you think about the full life cycle. You consider the inevitability that you will be hit at some stage. So you factor that into your investment, your planning, and your ability to respond as well.
Yeah, no, dude. And actually, interestingly, a few weeks ago, the NCSC in the UK had responsibility for cybercrime, part of GCHQ. They released their annual report, and pretty much the entire report was focused on resilience and hardening yourselves to attack. But most importantly, as you called out, being able to recover. A lot of that was driven. In fact, actually, I think the second page in that report was sort of an open letter from the CEO of the Co-op Group, which I think probably most people are aware of, the retail hacks that linked to Scattered Spider that happened in the UK in April, May time, if my memory serves me correctly. So obviously very important because we're still talking about them. But the CEO talking. Really about their their experience of an attack and being able to be resilient. Actually, great to see that in this world of AI, the CEO is very keen to point out the dedication and hard work and ability of the people on the ground to be able to get them up and running. But they were only as successful to repel that attack, to minimize the impact, because they were definitely prepared. And I think even in that report, the recommendation, be prepared to go to pen and paper, because you might not have systems to rely upon, and that's pen and paper for business operations, as much as it is for the actual cyber response side of it. I'm sure if we had Patrick Ragg from our incident response team on, he'd be calling out that ability to, if you're going to have a playbook, you're going to have your response approach documented. It's probably best to have it documented in paper so that you can break it out when you can. And
And of
Amit, I know
course,
that that one of the things that we chatted about actually was around resilience being enforced by regulation. We see DORA, we've seen NIS2. It's something that not only we're talking about, it's actually being enforced through regulation.
there's even acts now that have resilience in the title, the Cyber Resilience Act, for example, in there. And it forces organizations to think about maybe different metrics and key risk indicators that they should be aware of and should be working towards. Things like, what is my maximum tolerable downtime? What is my recovery time objective? And how, am I testing that and can I achieve it? Mean time to recover critical services. Recovery point objectives on backups, so how much of data loss is acceptable before, that's going to materially impact my business. So these are all, seeping into the cybersecurity domain because when you think about it in terms of cyber resilience, you need to think about these aspects as well.
You say creeping in. I'd say it's probably one of the things that is often forgotten about, but it's a key part of anything like ISO 27000 business continuity, and DR planning, making sure that you can operate. If you think about the CIA triad, that A on there is availability, which is obviously very important. So I guess just the last thing on this, because we do want to move on to some other topics, is what concrete steps can an organization take next year to improve their cyber resilience? I don't know, want us to chip in on that.
Yeah, I'm happy to throw in and then maybe Martin as well, but obviously, key actions are around governance and strategy. Even a lot of the regulation now is elevating cyber resilience to a board level responsibility so that the executive leadership takes ownership of the risk and aligns the strategy around it, aligning with the regulatory guidance, I say the various regulation that's coming out now. And then all of the a lot of the hygiene and best practices that we've been advocating in cybersecurity for years play in here, like zero trust and data protection. And third-party supply chain, which I think we'll cover later. But I don't know, Martin, you have other things
Yeah,
to think
I
about?
think, for me, resiliency really means being able to adapt quickly. And I think it's, I think everyone needs to go look at their strategy again and look at the tool sets they've maybe invested in, the ones that have been longstanding there, and relook at them and reevaluate and make sure that they're not necessarily best of breed, but certainly keeping up with today's technology. You spoke about some of those cloud protections technologies, and those are, it's just worth looking at that strategy and making sure that it's still aligned to that, to what technology and the techs are out there today.
Is it a topic that's cropping up in sort of South Africa and the Africa region, looking at resilience? Obviously, there's a lot of regulation in the EU and UK. Is it something that's cropping up more and more?
Yeah, for sure. There's definitely a lot more discussion around that in the region here. So I would definitely say, as much as we don't necessarily have legislation specifically named around it, people are taking notice and discussing it more openly. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously we held a round table around OT environments, and some of the people that attended were almost crying out for some regulation to enforce. And I guess that's probably helpful in your role to guarantee budgets as well. But that's a whole other topic that we'll avoid for today. So moving on to everybody's favorite topic, and that is AI, artificial intelligence, generative AI, agentic AI, AI agents. So, Martin, I'm just going to stick with yourself and get your view on, what the outlook for AI security is in 2026.
Yeah, look, it's obviously the hype for the last couple of years, and based on the poll, it's going to be into 2026 as well. I've always been a bit of a skeptic, if anyone knows me, but definitely it needs to be on the radar. The point where machines are battling machines and we're just sitting on the sideline watching it, I think that's still not going to happen next year. But certainly for attackers, they're using it to be more stealthy. I think still the biggest concern for me around AI is obviously the risks of companies using it within their business. But from an attacker's perspective, the social engineering bit, in the last year in particular, we've just seen the social engineering campaigns just it go to a level that we never expected. You actually don't come across a bad social engineering campaign nowadays, where you'd be able to spot misspellings and bad grammar. All that is a thing of the past.
Or
You
that
just
Nigerian prince offering you
yeah.
300
No,
million of his gold.
that doesn't happen anymore. The campaigns are very convincing. There's AI that's doing voice now, and we all know about even the video stuff. So that's still for me the easiest way that attackers are going to make use of AI. And yeah, we need to be ready with that, and we need to continue to do to educate our users about that. And then of course I think the risks around using AI within a business to me very much speaks to kind of traditional DLP, but we just need to think about it a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think it's quite a difficult tightrope to walk because you want to enable the use of AI for productivity. I know definitely execs are looking for that because they're looking for the competitive advantage. But how do you be able to make that the safe use of it without impacting people? Because I think it's very putting a blanket block on the use of AI. You'd be surprised at how many websites have an element of AI that all of a sudden you're blocking or even being able to do any research or anything. So it is quite tricky. Ahmed, I'm gonna bring you in because you've been silent for so far thus far. And just talking about how we protect from AI. What are you seeing? What's your view of how we really protect our AI and our users?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Rich. So, I like to actually compare AI and adopting AI to, let's say, the early days of adopting clouds. So there are lots of similarities here. So the first one is there is no way not to use AI in some way, shape, or form for your, whether it's your business users, your developers, your actually, the vendors are providing you with the different tools and the different security or non-security or IT-related tools. They all have some elements of AI built in within their products. So there is no way around it. Your organization, your users, and your third party are using AI in some way, shape, or form. And in the other similarity with cloud, it's not like we all know that, but it's not like one thing. So you do have from agentic AI, for example, to just simple public Gen AI like the ChatGPT, etc. And then they use the same way we can see how attackers and the threat groups are using clouds, for example, to hide and disguise their phishing websites and source of their attacks, etc. Similar, again, AI has been weaponized by threat actors. There are tons of bad GPTs. Like the irony, one of them is literally called Bad GPT that can help vendor. Yeah, sorry, that can help threat actors to write and develop lots of different payloads and ways in. That are very, not easy to detect. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect, for example, is literally attacks against AI. So, for example, we all know of prompt injection, for example, and data poisoning, etc. So there is, it's really multifaceted. So, but from my point of view, the first thing really when it comes to securing AI is pacing yourself. So we know we are, we already, everyone is using AI, as we said, but in the same time, we cannot let it be, you know, the main drive and just pulling the wagon while security is an afterthought, similar to clouds, because we know and we have seen from early cloud adoption, for example, or even adopting work from anywhere, for example, without the proper security measures, that will always lead to incidents and the breaches. We can talk more about, you know, like securing AI itself, but I'm conscious of
No,
the
indeed. Well, I mean,
time.
we'll come to yourself, Brian, in a second to get your what top things do we need to do in 2026 when it comes to AI. But I mean, you kind of mentioned bad GPT, and a lot of these LLMs obviously have guardrails put in place and policies to control what can be asked of them. Which we see prompt injection being able to get around them, and obviously the EU is bringing in the AI Act, which I think is January or February this next in 2026, that is going to set the requirements for the acceptable use of AI. But we've already seen them watering the act down to a certain extent. To make sure that they don't impact productivity and innovation within the AI and obviously within AI. And obviously things like bad GPT are probably not going to be hosted in the EU region. So how, that's not going to in generally not going to apply to ensure that AI is being used in a safe, secure and ethical manner. So just we spent quite a lot of time on this because obviously it was the the top challenge, top trend that people are concerned about, which I think is very, very real. Martin, I think we've got two CTOs on here that are massive AI skeptics. And that's not for the use of AI. It's not because we're dinosaurs and both have a career that started too many years ago. But I definitely think it's driven by the overhyped nature of the industry. All being led by marketing. No offense to Rebecca on from the marketing team that's joined us. But that need to make sensationalized headlines with the polymorphic malware and other things that isn't really how it's being used. You're right, it's definitely and what we'll see definitely see more of is the use of AI for those phishing campaigns, automating them, being able to do mass execution of them. We actually saw Scattered Spider, changing their tactics to use things like, and alongside Shiny Hunters, using things like bland AI for conversational AI to launch those voice attacks against people at scale. So, there is a huge challenge there, and it's definitely something that we're going to need to look at. Are we doing enough? Brian, I'm just going to come to you last because I know there's technology solutions coming to market, and just to kind of get your view on exactly should we be looking at technology solutions? Is there a technology answer in 2026?
Well, I think the first step actually is not a technology solution, is to have a clearly defined AI usage policy. And you know, that's kind of your baseline, if you like, and make sure everyone is aware of it. Because obviously, if you haven't thought about how you want to find that balance between leveraging the productivity benefits of AI, but at the same time securing your data, your information, and your users, you need to draw that line and have a policy around and make sure everyone's aware of it. Having said that, there are tools emerging to provide, you know, usage and prompt oversight, give visibility into shadow AI usage, providing, users, not necessarily blocking everything, but providing inline advice, redaction of sensitive information or PII. You know, inline education, blocking the most egregious misuse if that exists as well. And also just providing governance and oversight so you can see what's being used, where, by whom, and providing that visibility. So there are very useful tools emerging that can really help provide that visibility, because you do need to get that visibility into what's happening within the organization and provide some guardrails for people. On top of that as well, then the misuse of AI and social engineering and stuff like that and deepfakes, there's also tooling emerging to be able to detect that as well. So I think that those are definitely worth looking at in combination with policies and governance. Gartner have come out with their what they call their TRISM model, AI TRISM. So it's trust, risk, and security management around AI. And it talks about what you implement in your core security stack, and then some of the runtime protections you need, and then overall governance support as well. So I think that's definitely worth looking at in 2026, because this is moving very quickly, and I think you do need to put something around it. I don't think you can just let it evolve naturally without thinking about how you're going to control it into the new year.
Yeah, and that TRISM does call out that very correctly, there's no it's a whole stack holistic approach. There's going to be no silver bullet for it. That deepfake detection technology is a great example, which will continue. Yes, yeah, so I'd say it's a developing area. But I think the most recent views on it in terms of testing, excellent at being able to identify deepfakes from known LLMs, but less so when it comes to a brand new model that is unable to recognize and needs to learn. And I think from what I saw in one talk that I attended that looked at them, the effectiveness dropped off from sort of the high 80s and 90s down to the sort of mid 30% detection rate. Once it's a new model, and that's I think there's just going to be constantly. I mean, it's the nature of the cybersecurity game that there's always going to be an arms race and trying to catch up as much as possible. So I will move us on because the second biggest concern for our people on the call today or on the webinar today was geopolitical. Geopolitics and how it's going to shape cyber risk. So I promise that we're going to get political on here. And Brian, I'm going to stick with yourself and really ask the question, how will nation state threat actors and their activity influence the pertinent threats in 2026? So really, what geopolitical development should organizations be most mindful of when planning their security programs for the new year?
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen in previous years, the campaigns linked to Russia, Iran, and China and North Korea and other nation states will continue to target, our Western supply chains, government networks, armed with some of these new tools, these AI-enhanced malware and misinformation technologies, and that will only, kind of further amplify the disruption and the confusion. Like the 2025 breach of F5 was attributed to a sophisticated state actor, and it's just an example of the trend. What we're seeing is the state-backed actors are refining their methods, and really particularly targeting trusted software and hardware ecosystems, supply chains, also zero-day vulnerabilities that are uncovered by the nation state actors are often being exploited in campaigns, but then trickling down into the broader cyber criminal ecosystem because there's often a blurry line between the nation state actors and the criminal enterprises that sometimes work in concert with them, or at least in some form of collaboration. We'll also see, we're seeing heightened trade tensions, between, globally, between China, US, EU, and we're seeing things like the weaponization of supply chains, like semiconductors, and this is driving things like intensified espionage, intellectual property theft, that we need to be increasingly cognizant of as well. You've also got the rise of hacktivist groups that are often tied to, ideological or nationalist causes, and these attacks not only target, governments but also private enterprises that they see as symbolic, and we've seen it politically symbolic, and we've seen examples of that where businesses, just because the nature of their supply chain or who they're using or where they might may have offices, are suddenly becoming targets for these types of attacks. So yeah, effectively we're seeing a sort of a erosion and a reordering of the post Cold War rules-based international order, with a lot of strained alliances and new regional alignments going on. And that can often impact where technology providers operate and where interventions happen and where, regulatory changes impact organizations as well. So overall, I would say in 2026, cyber resilience, as the big topic we're talking about, requires that situational awareness and intelligence-led defense. So, really understanding, having a view of the threat intelligence that will arm you of where the real threats are, and help you understand, anticipate those threats, protect your supply chains, and maintaining, understanding where you need to host your data, protect your data, and what regulation you need to adhere to, and ensure that you're in a position to defend against and detect those particular tactics and techniques that those threat actors may be targeting against you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's interesting. Well, when it comes to nation state actors, that trend that we're seeing over and over again is, the compromise of software supply chain, and, trusted vendors. You make, that F5 example. You see the US government scrambling to get government bodies to patch those systems that may have already been exploited, from those stolen vulnerability data and stolen source code. So I think that's something we'll see over and over again. That preparedness to be able to move quickly will be key. There was something else you mentioned there, which is, being aware of where you're hosting and storing your data. Martin, I'm sure this is a question you'll probably want to dodge, but I'm putting you on the spot. As a man that grew up in Texas, I'd say you're the right person to answer this. But the question really is, when it comes to the US, do we see them as a benign state actor anymore?
Yeah, so we always being here in the African region, we always I felt we're almost shielded from geopolitics in a certain sense, but certainly that's not the case anymore. I think that the real kind of big concern for us is just the uncertainty that we have as of recently around geopolitics. The things change so rapidly. Certainly in the African region, we're in the thick of things here. There's a lot of resources in Africa. There's a lot of potential growth in Africa. Everyone, many of the nations want a piece of it. So, yeah, that's really something that's uncertainty that we don't have much control over. So I think we just need to be ready for that. Is the US benign? I don't think they were ever benign. When you read these some of these reports back to the days of Snowden, there's a lot of stuff that we don't know about that's going on in there, and we can just do our best to be prepared. And like Brian mentioned about the intelligence, pay attention to these things as much as we may think that they don't affect us much. But I was actually surprised to see that second on the poll. So it's good that we have that awareness. So yeah, and that's kind of my view of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is very interesting that it's something that people are concerned of. And I think, day to day, as you say, things change so quickly. I mean, it was only yesterday that Trump declared that us European nations are weak and our civilization is eroding. So you know, we're not flavor of the month at the moment, so we can see what happens after that. So
So
let's
can I
move.
just,
Yeah, sorry, Ahmed,
sorry,
go ahead.
just a small, very small note. Like I would say that usually when you talk about geopolitics and its effects on cybersecurity, we focus more on the state-backed, state actors, state-backed actors. But there is also the extended risk, for example, for your supply chain. So if we took, for example, you mentioned where your data is hosted, but also I think that the technology in general and security specifically is pretty much concentrated in specific regions, I would say. So yeah, like the US is a big example. So I believe that, and that's may not be really a, for example, like a responsibility about like on organizations, but it's on different other states and the governments. Like perhaps there need to be like there is a dire need for security solutions and and infrastructure and clouds, etc. Like all that supporting infrastructure and security systems as well. Not to be always, let's just say, dependent, for example, on other regions that you may have always considered as, like an ally, for example, because as you just mentioned, like that can change very quickly. So that's, I would say, an extension of the tension and the dynamic nature of geopolitics that is also a risk.
Just to extrapolate that, I mean, you see the US that they wanted to not sell chips to China, and where are our cloud providers sitting? They're in the US. What if there's a sudden, oh, well, we don't want to sell cloud to, I know that sounds extreme, but extreme is the name, is the favor of the day. So yeah, that's a very good point, Tommy.
Yeah, and actually, I think a couple of things. One, I think next year we will see that continued increase of hacktivism. We're seeing it, and all based on ideological reasons. We see it organizations being targeted around links to Israel. And I'm sure we'll see, other activities, but it kind of just brings home. And there was a breach or compromise of a number of London borough councils that impact immediately impacted the delivery of services. But I think you can easily see the risk and threat that state actors can pose to bring a country into chaos very quickly. That as things escalate, I think it's gonna generally impact us a hell of a lot more. As they target the infrastructure, target the people, which actually brings me nicely onto our next topic, which is around critical infrastructure. As as I mentioned, Martin, we held a round table on operational technology and infrastructure. And in the EU, there's UK, focus on critical national infrastructure. But Brian, I'm going to just come to you first, really, and to look at will the threats against OT environments and cyber physical systems increase in 2026, or do you see them kind of staying the same, declining? And I suppose at the same time, what are those threats?
I definitely see them increasing. The recent research shows there is already a 60% increase in threat actors targeting the industrial sector, and an 80% or so increase in ransomware attacks against industrial organizations in this year. So that trend is on the up. As threat actors see these as lucrative targets, they're investing more in they're focusing, if you like, more on these types of targets, and that is can only lead to more increase in 2026. There's a feeling that they're sort of only getting started, and there's no evidence that it's hitting a plateau anytime yet. Many, like I think the majority of industrial organizations do experience cyber attacks frequently, and many on a daily basis. And why is that? It's because OT, operational technology, cyber physical systems, industrial environments make great targets for threat actors, because generally the cyber investment, the cyber hygiene is poor as compared to IT environments, and the stakes are very high. So if you're successfully breached, then only a few hours of downtime typically can be more costly than a typical ransomware payment, making the case very strong to just pay up so you can get your business operational again. So yes, unfortunately, it's only going to increase, and there are typical weaknesses that make it easy, I won't say easy, but that are typically what we see as being, the gaps, the cybersecurity gaps, things like a lack of segmentation, obsolete components that haven't been patched, lack of visibility and monitoring, assets that are maybe embedded into systems but are kind of unprotected against malware and not hardened enough, and so forth. So all of these things make the job of the threat actor a lot easier once they get in.
Yeah, no, indeed. And I think, one of the things that nobody voted for in our poll was identity. So we're not going to talk about that in detail, but I think that's, if we look at some of those challenges in securing OT environments, definitely identity is one of them. The ability to put modern authentication in place. And alongside that, just getting that, visibility of what's there, and segmentation. So, I mean, what should we be doing to try and, protect these OT environments?
So I would say that from identity angle, it's again whatever applies to IT to a large extent, like IT network environments to a large extent applies to OT, especially when you start when it's not like a fully isolated or like air-gapped environment. We know that there is remote monitoring and there is lots of system now that needs, of course, like distributed systems, so that they need the connections to the outside world or to other parts of the organization. So there are plenty of controls that you can apply to when it comes to, like, from an identity angle, when it comes to accessing OT environments. So just naming a few. So there are, like, similar to remote PAM, for example, a hybrid between remote PAM and zero trust network access. So that And basically, it always enforces that any access request, any action, etc., is controlled, sanitized, authorized, and auditable at the same time. So definitely, there is a strong relation between a proper identity hygiene and securing OT environments. And the other thing I would say is other zero trust principles should also, not just the ones related to identity, but other principles should apply as well to OT. So something as like on the network level, for example, segmentation, that would be another very good practice.
Yeah, just on the segmentation, just to mention that over 70% of breaches in OT environments originate in the IT environment. I think it's like nearly 75%. So by just putting in really good segmentation, and there's like the Purdue model and the IEC standards 62443, by implementing a program like that, if you can eliminate that 75% risk from the IT environment, then at least you're effectively reducing that risk by 75% in terms of your OT environment being breached. So that's a crucial area to look at as well.
Yeah, indeed. So, in the interest of time, I'm just gonna we'll cover one more area. I think there's a, plenty that we could talk about, and perhaps we'll do a part two to touch upon everything that we'd like to touch upon. And with the architect of the CyberFire MDR service, and actually architect of Integrity's Aegis MDR service on here as well, and main contributors to that. I think it would be remiss of me not to touch upon threat detection and response. and how we're going to see that develop over 2026. So, and actually, I will probably get some competing views here. So, I'm going to start with yourself, Martin. Going into 2026, how do you see, detection and response evolving?
Actually, I'm gonna bring the identity thing into it because I think that that's actually so I was surprised to see no one vote for that. For us, it's really kind of high on the list of concerns and things we're putting a lot of focus onto at the moment. And it combines cloud identities in particular. And so the thought process is that we've gotten more mature as organizations in terms of EDR and getting visibility on the endpoint. So we have a good grip on that. But what we're seeing a lot of nowadays is that attackers are just bypassing the endpoint altogether, and they're phishing and getting access to cloud identities and executing their attacks like that. And so that really means that we've spent all this time on protecting the endpoint and getting visibility on the endpoint. We've had cloud for many years now, and we're still seeing attacks against cloud. And actually, there's a lot more focus now. I think we had a look at some of the numbers, and the business email compromises that we're looking at, in the last couple of months, they're all using very sophisticated attacks to steal identities, and they're not touching the endpoint. So it doesn't matter how well your endpoint is deployed and how good it is, you're not going to see any logs in that kind of realm, in that log source. So yeah, we're putting a lot of focus on the cloud. And I think there's some challenges there because the cloud is so diverse. It's not just a Windows endpoint that we're talking about. There's different cloud platforms. The logs within those platforms are really complex and not standardized. They have different licensing models, and we got to make the best out of that to be able to make sure that we can be very proactive in terms of detecting those identity breaches in the cloud. So for me, I think that's really the biggest focus for us. Of course, being able to respond quickly and all those other metrics are more important. Everyone is talking about them. It's not just good enough to be able to say you're going to help an organization. You need to be able to track those metrics and continuously improve. So that's obviously another area that we'll continue to work on and that we, I think, need to focus on as well.
Yeah, and I know something you've been focused on, but I assume you'll get a resounding agreement from you that we've got to step outside of just collecting a bit of telemetry from the endpoints and deploying EDRs when it comes to threat detection response.
Oh, 100%. Like that's, I think it's a very well known fact by now. Like you do have, like endpoint is a small, very small part of your organization or your environment. You got your clouds. That's like the elephant in the room. You got your clouds. You got your identity, as Martin alluded to, and identities include like human, non-human, like machines and services, and even AI again. So and you got your network. You got your data, and there is plenty of different areas that you need to have visibility of. Not just visibility, but you need the proper I would what we would like to call like a the detection engine that is specialized to look within this area. So between endpoint and applications and identity and network and data and the clouds and the workspaces, for example, like Google Workspace, Microsoft 365, etc. So all that's really is your area. And when you cover that, so now we are target, we're having good threat detection coverage. But then there is the second point of bringing the proactive, security measures into our MDR service as well, where it's not just limited to looking at threats and let's say, malicious activities or suspicious activities that are happening now, but taking a few steps back and looking at the weak points and risks and exposures that may lead to these threats.
Yeah, there's definitely there's no point Very little point detecting just a small part of the estate and IT landscape. And as you say, there's very little point just waiting for a breach to happen. We've got to get on the front foot and be proactive. Brian, just I'll give the last word on this before we jump to the Q&A on your view of how you think and see MDR developing over the course of 2026.
Well, Martin, I've covered a lot of it. Maybe the one other area which does tie in a little bit to what Ahmed was talking about is platform consolidation that we're seeing in the market. So there are different flavors of MDR. You've got your turnkey MDR where the platform comes with the service, and then you have open vendor MDR, which is in the case of our Aegis MDR service that wraps the service around discrete detection and response technologies that the customer may have in their environment. And as you say, typically that might have been an independent SIEM platform taking logs from network devices and other types of sources. And you might have had an EDR looking after the endpoint. And we're seeing continuous evolution of consolidated platform plays, but combining EDR, NDR, up into XDR, where that also has log analytics, like the SIEM folding into the XDR platform as well. So that is driving more kind of an integrated view of what's going on, and more automation can be fed in, including the AI, which is also a kind of a big trend in these services and technologies that is helping with some of the digestion of all of this large volumes of data to make sense of it as well. So I think that the whole platform evolution with the melding in of AI, helping to improve and and something make the service and the platforms more cost effective as well.
And we could also then spend a lot of time talking about how exposure management rolls into MDR and being a key point in 2026. But I tell you what, we're getting hard up on time. I can see there is a question in the Q&A, so we will. And as I say, we've covered a small subset of what we've covered in our trends and predictions report. Actually, even a small subset of the things we're hoping to get through today. So everything from quantum, which you've done very well to get me through a webinar without mentioning quantum computing, human risk, cloud, SASE. Many things that we didn't touch upon. So, as I said, perhaps we'll look at a follow-up webinar to cover that. So, we're just going to go to the Q&A function. If I can just find my Q&A box here to look at the questions. So, I will encourage if you've got any questions or want to spend a little bit of time talking about any of those other areas, please do drop them in the Q&A function. So the question we've got in here, are you able to say the sample size of the poll? I can't see how many viewers are here. Okay, so that's from Johnny. So the poll itself, I think I'll have to, I think it did show up on the back end here. I haven't got it to hand. But from memory, it was at least two-thirds of people that attended. So we're looking at a good sort of 70 to 80 people that have responded to the poll. So it gives us a very good view of that. So it wasn't a handful of people. So yeah, a good sample size that responded. So yeah, some very good insights that we can see there. So just before we wrap up, are there any other questions that anyone would like to pop in? Give you a couple of seconds there. If not, I think it's going to leave it for me to really say thank you very much for joining. Thank you very much for joining our webinar series over the course of 2025. We'll be kicking off again, I think it's the 13th of January for our first webinar next year, where we're going to look back and deep dive into some of the major threats, sorry, major breaches that we saw in 2025 and what we should do, think about in 2026. As I said, we'll try and shoehorn some of those extra topics in to another webinar. But thank you very much for joining. Look forward to seeing you all on a webinar in 2026. And just a very quick thank you to Brian, to Martin, and to Ahmed for joining me today on the webinar. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks
Cheers.
all. Bye-bye.